Welcome to concurrent session 3B, which is orchestrating scheme impact with AI. My name's Dave Gregory from Allianz. Our presenters today, Min Phan from Finity, who's head of AI innovation at Finity, and it'll be Aaron Cutter as well. So for people who are at the opening of the presentation this morning, Aaron will be a familiar face. Well done for picking up the Taylor Fry Award. Not for this paper. But this one was a close second, I'm sure. No, sorry. Righto, so we're in for a 40-minute session. I believe Aaron will kick off. We'll have 30-something minutes of presentation and certainly time for questions at the end, so we can take questions via the app, and I'll do my best to squint, read, curate and ask. There is a microphone in the middle of the room as well, or for people at the front, I can even walk a mic to you. So I think that's all we need to do for housekeeping. I'll hand over to Aaron.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. I'll just put the mic down a little bit. Welcome, everyone, to the after-lunch session. Hopefully the after-lunch kind of coma is not going to kick in for you all. We'll try and keep it as entertaining as we can. Yeah, as Dave said, my name's Aaron Cutter. I'm a principal at Finity Consulting, and here to talk to you about AI and how its relevance to schemes. Presenting with me will be Min. I'll do a bit of an introduction, hand over to Min to do the good content, and I'll come back and wrap things up. Not rap, W-R-A-P, for those that are expecting something a little bit more from me. Sorry to disappoint. Probably pronounce his surname correctly, but Kowalkiewicz this morning really set this up for us today. He set the scene, set the excitement level, and I think that AI, in terms of scheme, in terms of its embedment with schemes, is really on the forefront at the moment. But let me just talk to you a little bit about what we are going to be talking about today. So AI comes in many different guises. And at one end of the spectrum might be things like linear regression. That's called AI these days. But we are really talking about the language models, the speech models, and the vision models. So that's what we're looking at for today's talk. So those systems that can read, write, listen, view, kind of like humans do, although maybe more like aliens do, according to the talk this morning. So keep that in mind when you're looking at how we are presenting AI. It's really about those large language models and the use of the unstructured information that is prevalent in schemes but has thus far been underutilised. And I think that's me done for the moment.
Thanks, Aaron. So my name is Min and I'll be taking the first half of the session. And so, yeah, so I'm currently leading the AI practice at Finity, but I'm also a part-time aspiring musician or hobbyist. And I don't know if was anyone at the Actuary Summit session earlier this year in May? Like, did anybody attend that? Oh, great, only one person. So I've got this framework here, and don't worry, it's not the same slides. It's just my framework where I view this kind of five-step process of integrating AI. And I kind of make this analogy to composing an AI symphony. So I kind of see it in five steps. So first is around finding inspiration by identifying opportunities in the business where AI can provide value. That's primarily in using unstructured data. And then to take action on those opportunities, you need to understand a little bit about theory. And that theory can come in the form of actually just using the AI as well as understanding high-level concepts. Next comes the instruments or the tools. So over here, you wanted to know what's out there, how you can deploy them. And in this presentation, we'll kind of talk about, what are the various layers of automation and integratedness that you can kind of progress down. Then next is to follow the conductor who will set the rules so you can get access and think about the governance perspective. And then the final stage is composing AI symphony. So like actually real use cases that solve problems. So that's the kind of framework. And yeah, so we'll start off with inspiration. So in terms of finding inspiration, I've had to do this quite a lot across lots of different different industries, and I kind of have a kind of two-step process in order to do this. One is looking externally. So from a cross-industry perspective, where you just look at, okay, well, what is it that people are doing in personal lines, in commercial lines, in strata, in different kind of industry, and even outside of insurance. Next is around desktop research, so just using AI to help you find out, well, what are things that people have implemented within your industry specifically? And then the third one is around conferences, so going to conferences like these and networking and asking, well, what have people been doing? So that's from an external perspective. Internally, I've kind of framed this before. It's around finding underused, unstructured data and high-volume manual processes. So underused, indicating that there's more value to be unlocked from in using that data via AI, and high-volume indicating that, well, if it's repeated enough, then it justifies the energy and effort and cost to build out a system to automate that solution. So I think kind of using both the both external and internal methods to kind of find inspiration is a valuable exercise, and this is kind of how I approach it across everything that I've done. So cross-industry use cases, this is kind of a slide that I've kind of collated throughout doing this exercise a lot, and it ultimately comes down to kind of three categories that I've boiled down to: analytics, assistance, and automation. So from the analytics side, the first one is around data enrichment. So ultimately, it's using AI to create structured attributes, structured attributes from unstructured fields. It could be using AI to clean up the label of your data. So you could have an incorrect target labels and kind of using AI to kind of transcribe that. Or it can be using it to fuzzy match against other columns. The other thing that you can use in a data perspective is clustering. So finding grouping similar claims based on their meaning. And a few years ago, my colleague Michael McLean gave a talk here where he used the case notes to find, well, are there claims that look very similar to it? And if that's the case, then he kind of constructed these attributes to work out, to put back into his model to work out what's the probability of this thing converting to common law claim. And so he kind of used the concept of embeddings to find similarity of claims to construct additional features that feed back into the analytical process. From an analytics perspective, I've grayed out this kind of predictive analytics, which is kind of using AI to form predictions or outcomes. That's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about the large language models and the kind of use of AI to take unstructured information and parse them to form useful things, which can feed into predictive analytics. The next kind of category is using AI for assistance. In this case, it's the most common assistant that you can have is effectively a chat agent that is grounded in specialist knowledge. And this can either help staff internally by finding things faster, or if you're brave, you can get direct to customer. So, which is kind of something that some industries are kind of exploring, where you know the stakes are less high. So, for example, understanding policy inclusions in PDSs. And so the assistants kind of just help information be kind of delivered to either internal or external customers faster. And then the final category is in automation. So document ingestion, so things where you have emails, PDFs, taking all these kind of unstructured things and parsing them so that you can basically unblock a process that previously would have been too hard to automate. But if you kind of then take that thing and you can get a structured field that you can kind of push to the next part of your pipeline, which is kind of in your process automation. So these are kind of very, very broad descriptions of things that can be used. But of course, the key is looking at these use cases and seeing how do they apply within your industry is what matters. So the next thing I went to do is finding external inspiration. So I've done this many times now, and I use AI to try to work out, well, what is the AI use cases in any particular industry? And so, as the kind of presenter this morning mentioned, there's a thing called deep research where you can kind of ask agents to kind of look through a particular problem and give you a comprehensive report. So here I ask AI, what are the use cases of generative AI in workers' comp and accident schemes? Return back the answer as a table in Australia, Europe, America, other to the company, give a short description, give a moderate description, try and find contemporary use cases. It'll take this kind of prompt and do a kind of 10 to 30 minute research and return me back kind of a series of of applications. And of course, you do this again. You do this across ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, and Perplexity, and then you can collate all the information. And I was expecting to find lots and lots and lots of use cases, but it turns out, there weren't as many as I thought. But here are the ones I did find. So there was Hexaware, who did medical summaries for an Australian insurer. They claim 45%. Reduction in claim resolution times, DXC Assure, a workers' comp platform, streamlining intake and case workflows. And then in Australia, there's QBE, who do AI call summaries that apparently reduce call time from 7 to 2 minutes. Queensland NIISQ, which is invoice processing, so 90% reduction in manual effort, and USA Allstate customer comms for drafting comms daily. So, the two yellow ones are tech-based companies where I guess you can kind of put a grain of salt on the stats that they give, because they're always going to say that it's, you know, potentially better than what it is. But that's kind of what I found in terms of researching what is available out there across kind of Australia and in other jurisdictions. Out of all of these, the key thing that kind of came out is that all of these are ultimately related to the claims cycle. And that kind of then made me realize, well, let's focus on what that looks like. So given that all of these kind of claims related, when we go from the internal inspiration side, let's kind of just focus on, well, what does that claims lifestyle look like? And what are the unstructured data that we can use that AI can help us with? So in terms of this, it's, you know, early injury notification and initial contacts. We've got, I can't read my tiny writing, but yeah, emails, scan forms, certificate of capacities, reports, the actual phone calls that people have are considered unstructured, and then kind of police reports. Next stage is collecting information. So things for calculating the pre-injury average weekly wage and drafting the return to work plan. When you collect the wage data, some of the times it's nice in a spreadsheet, some of the times it's an absolute mess. So you can use AI to parse that. You have got further some certificates of capacity in that stage as well. There's a liability determination and the entitlements. So again, kind of that the report itself and payment schedules and the further certificates of capacity, policies, procedures, and protocols that are unstructured in that bit. Investigations and disputes. So the reports. Yeah. So in cases where there's disputes, those reports from the IMEs and investigations are also unstructured. And finally, the ongoing management and closure. So email correspondence, phone correspondence, and you know, other reports. So I think of it in terms of if externally a lot of the use cases are in kind of claims management, this is what the claims management lifestyle is. These are the unstructured elements. Aaron's going to go through, if these are the unstructured elements, what are the bits that AI can help us with? So I'll come back to that in a bit. So we'll go into theory. And so in terms of understanding theory, I find that the best way to learn about what AI is capable of is just by using it. And I'm sure everyone has kind of used ChatGPT or an equivalent at this point, and use it daily to understand what AI is good at doing and what it isn't. And things that are relevant for could be that AI is really good at extracting data. So if you have a narrative that says something, if you have a form, you can say, return to me the name, the email address, and injury details from this table, and return it as a structured input. Or if you have a narrative of, okay, from this employer incident narrative, give me the body part, which could be the back, the mechanism for this injury, which is due to lifting, the location, which is the warehouse, and the cause, which is the ladder. So if you kind of went into ChatGPT and you kind of dropped this thing in, you'll be able to see, or ChatGPT or equivalent, you'll find that it's really good at kind of extracting these attributes for you. Next is just around summarizing documents. I'm sure you've done this before, but yeah, summarizing the medical report with certain bullet points around the diagnosis, prognosis, causation, opinion. AI is really good at writing, so it can draft an acceptance letter for you, considering the evidence and the legislative sections that apply. It's good at comparing documents, so you could have the comparison of a GP report with an IME report, highlighting any potential differences in the diagnosis, causation, and work capacity, and reasoning. So it could just be working out the reasoning on whether something should be accepted or not. So these are all the things that you can kind of do manually, and as long as you have kind of an approved internal tool. And yeah, I kind of say you can do this in ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, but most people should have Copilot available. And I used to rag on Copilot all the time, but it's actually pretty decent now, powered by GPT-5, as long as you kind of toggle it on. So you can kind of do these exercises at a unit level and work out what is AI good at doing and what isn't it. And the key here is ultimately LLMs unlock the value of unstructured data. Here I won't kind of dwell on this, kind of five concepts to build AI systems. I have a whole hour webinar on this. If anyone's attended the webinar, I think Kylie's in the room, there's at least one. If you're interested in kind of, I can spend a whole hour on this. If you're interested, hit me up and I can kind of send you the link to those recordings. But yeah, I'm going to speed run through the fact that there are different ways that you can access models via API or vendor open weights. There are different types of LLMs. But it's around combining knowledge tools and wrapping them in agentic patterns to try to kind of build out these systems. Do you want to take a photo of that? You can get the slides later, yeah. It's very perfect. But I'm going to give you the abridged version of this thing, which is because everyone's talking about AI agents, and I want to kind of demystify these concepts and just break it down to hopefully a kind of easy representation for you guys. So when we think of AI agents, I think it's combined. It's the component of kind of three core attributes. The first are the instructions, so contained in the prompts and instructions that you give, which define the tasks that they need to do. The second is around the knowledge. So it's extra information that you supply. So it could be your handbook or policies or procedures, as well as the information and the knowledge that the AI has in its own kind of base knowledge. And the third are tools. So things that you can provide your agent so they can take actions on your behalf. And so a common tool that agents have now is the ability to search the web. So when you kind of open ChatGPT, you ask a question, it realizes it doesn't know, it's going to search the web and kind of do these actions. But you can actually provide additional tools to AI agents. So things like reading your emails or accessing SharePoint or Confluence, these are kind of, or writing and reading files from these attributes, these are actually additional tools that you can supply to your AI. And on top of that, you can even build out custom tools so that it can read and write from your policy admin system. So most of the time when you're using chat agents, you're only considering the first two buckets, so the instructions and knowledge. You're kind of supplying, you're uploading a file and you're asking questions, or you're just asking questions. But know that the kind of ability to attach tools so that AI can take action on your behalf is really important concept of AI agents. And there's the ability for these AI agents to take multiple steps. And while AI is capable of doing that, to improve the reliability of your systems, I always kind of recommend that people decompose the tasks into their component steps. For example, if you have an agent that wants to kind of retrieve an email, extract fields, and enter the system, you should kind of separate them out into three separate nodes and hand off the information to each other, because effectively you're going to get it's similar to if you're delegating to an analyst, you say write me the report versus write me this section, then write me this section, then write me this section. If you decompose tasks to their unit things, they're more likely to get it right. So same with AI. Give it a big task, it's just going to, might do the right thing, but it's more likely to get it right if you decompose. The other thing to note is that sometimes you don't even need agents to do things. So retrieving an email and entering into a system, you can just write that with pure deterministic code, because none of those things actually involve unstructured information. So I would recommend here, the only part that needs AI is the extracting fields from unstructured data component. So if I was to build an AI system for this, it would be deterministic code that retrieves the email, then use AI to extract the fields, and then you kind of parse that and send it to the system using pure code again. So that kind of gives you like a higher probability of getting stuff right. Because we're all scared of AI hallucination, and the more guardrails that you can kind of put into, so decomposition and not using AI as much as you can is going to be really valuable. So that's kind of AI agents kind of simplified a little bit more. But if you want the detailed, the codey version of that, hit me up for the webinar. We go into like coding in Python and lots of fun stuff. That's kind of the high level version. Next is around instruments. So choosing and deploying your tools. So I think of this kind of, ultimately, technology is around the choices that you use to integrate AI into your workflows. And so if you think about it, the simplest integration that you can have is that you can use a human that will extract the information from your system, do the action, and then kind of move it to the next part of the process, right? So if you want automation, you can have computers doing every step. But at the heart of it, like, the first thing you could do is just manually pull the information, do something by yourself, and then inject it. And so that's the first step of this layer is just using a chatbot and kind of doing... And I kind of described before, once you use a chatbot, you can learn how to extract, summarize, write, compare, reasoning, and see whether AI, if you supply exactly the right information in a small prompt, can it even do your task or can it not? And then if it can't, like, do you need to phrase it better? Have you provided too much information, too little information? Is the task too big? Do you need to decompose the problem further? This kind of first step is just working out whether AI can do it can do the task or not if you just give it exactly the information it needs. And then if you end up doing that action often, then you can realize, well, I should be able to reuse these and store these prompts and store this knowledge base. And that's where you head on to the next category, which is these agents that, again, I'm putting Copilot Studio here as something that you guys probably have access to. You can use Copilot Studio to create these reusable agents that you can store instructions, store knowledge, and store tools that you can just reuse. Now, one problem is that if you have a multi-step problem, then, you know, like I said before, AI agents are capable of doing these things, but you want to decompose into small steps. You kind of max out the ability of what these agents can do. And so in that case, where you have lots and lots of small steps and you kind of want granular control, that's where you want to build out your own external applications. And so you need someone that kind of understands either Python or JavaScript. And basically, this will allow you to kind of build out any complex workflow that you want in a complex and kind of the other benefit that you have is that you can build out any integrations to any application. So an example of doing this is that example before of kind of retrieving an email, extracting the text and kind of injecting to a system. Well, that system injection, we were able to kind of build out an integration to a policy admin system using the API. That API also has structured fields and certain levels that are forced that you need to have. So we kind of build all that logic into our kind of Exxon application and, we were able to kind of integrate into the system. And while it's kind of technically feasible with agents, I kind of wouldn't recommend doing that. And in the fourth kind of step of this thing is integrated AI, which is if you have built out your own software, then you can, the most seamless application is actually just inject AI directly into the application. But I think a lot of the times you're using external vendors, and so you'll have to rely on their ability to kind of execute out your workflows. And so I find that the sweet spot for a lot of clients is using 2 and 3, so agents for really simple tasks that are repeated over and over, so any chat-like interfaces, so basically interacting with policy documents policy documents or kind of grounded databases on SharePoint, really useful to build out kind of AI agents on Copilot Studio. But anything more complex than that, it's actually building out applications that are kind of hand-built in Python and JavaScript. So that's kind of, yeah, and so that in terms of seamlessness, they kind of go, you get more seamless as you're going to head down that pyramid. And that's it for me. I'm going to hand over to Aaron, who'll talk about governance and applications. Aaron?
Thank you, Min. Can I please have the clicker? Thank you. So Min's kind of given you a good view of the what. And I guess where I come into it as a kind of senior leader of Affinity is wanting to talk to you a little bit about the governance, so the conductor, it's the how-to. And really it's the guardrails that makes they're essential for making AI fly in your organisation, because without them, then there are so many things that can go wrong. I'm not going to kind of go into the war stories or the doomsday scenarios, but really AI needs to fit in with your own risk management framework and your own risk appetite and come along the journey like that. It's a little bit different from general analytics in that what Min probably didn't mention is that the use of large language models and the likes is a probabilistic approach. So you can ask the same question in the same way or a slightly different way and come up with very different answers. And so it's you've got to treat it like it's an analyst and it does need to be checked very carefully. But we want to go through, so I've got notes that I need my glasses for and I can't see anything else. So there's a range of things that we do at Finity, sort of the layers of data sensitivity, policy principles, and governance in practice, which I'll go through. So the first is around data sensitivity. You want to be really careful about what your organisation allows to be used in different models. So public models, you really don't want to be using anything other than public data in those because no matter how many guardrails you put in place, you can tick the box that says, please don't train on my data, but who really knows what's going to happen with that information? So we have very clear guidelines, and you should too, about which models can be used for public information, for company confidential information, for personally identifiable information, and in these schemes, critically, for sensitive, medical, personally identifiable information. And obviously the levels of security and control need to escalate as you go up that. So, you know, medical records, you don't want to be putting into a public ChatGPT, for example. There are private instances of GPT that you can use, which are off-site or in the cloud. There are also more and more ability to use private models on your own silicon that use things like quantized models, so they use up less space, less computation, perhaps a little bit less accurate in its return of information, though. So these trade-offs need to be thought of as well. The policies and principles. So you need very clear guidelines. So you've got to have both a technological approach to governance, but also a training and education approach to governance. All of your staff will have access to these large language models. All of your staff will be using them in some way, shape or form. And so it's very important that the previous components of the data sensitivity is top of mind when your staff are using these models. So what we have at Finity is a very clear approval process for models and what they can be used for. So Min and others are in a committee that look at the models, look at how secure they are, where the data is stored, where the data can be fleetingly or in transit. So the calculations might be done in the US, but the data's never stored there. Is that okay or is that not? And you'll have your own, as I said, risk appetite, but you'll also have Australian privacy principles that you'll need to be conscious of. You'll also have your own state government principles that need to be thought of as well. So you need to be looking at what's the lowest common denominator of where I can use this information and why. And it might be your own company's risk appetite that drives that. There's review and enablement, which I just went through there. It's critical that you have that policy of the review done up front and not built out after somebody has actually done something that they shouldn't have with data. So before you even start to walk, you need to build out these policies and procedures to enable your organisation to use these models safely. And finally, we have, and you probably also have, risk and compliance committees, and anything to do with AI is through the risk and compliance committee, whether it be the models. It's also the contracting that we do with our clients, our suppliers, et cetera, et cetera. So we kind of make sure that everyone knows what they're expecting to see and what's able to be done with AI. That's kind of the conductor, and it sounds onerous, but it actually makes the use of AI much safer, and the ability for your organisations to innovate much clearer. I'm now going to the Symphony. So Min put this slide up before with the first two columns filled out. So I guess, you know, this is the internal inspiration, so the claims life cycle. This will be familiar with a lot of people in the room. But I guess at each stage of ingestion, summarisation, classification, reading reports, claim closure, etc., there are ways in which large language models can assist. I pause when I say to make these things more efficient, because apparently that's not allowed to be done anymore. You've got to leave room for your staff to utilise that additional space for some more creative thinking, which I think is probably true, because, you know, these models and these new techniques, they are good at giving you a first go at something. Min mentioned the repetitive tasks, the reading of things, the understanding the black and white of procedures, and being kind of your assistant sitting beside you without having to have somebody train you up as you go. So they work very well for that, but they're not really designed to do your job, because what we do is very human-centric. What we do is nuanced in an ability to use knowledge and expertise and experience to make sure that the decisions you're making are the right decisions. AI can't do that. All it can do is probabilistically look at what's been done elsewhere and fold that across your policies and procedures and give you an option. And it's not something that you should take as gospel. So just a couple of things to go through, because I am conscious of time. We've probably got about 3 minutes left of content before we get into the questions. But just looking at sort of ingestion and summarising claims data. So this is your first notification of loss. Well, that's a more of a motor, but your claims application forms will probably have differences. It's better these days because most of the applications are electronic applications. So, but back in the day when it was, you know, your GP would write on a scribbly piece of paper that this person was in a motor vehicle accident or a workplace injury, and then you had to go through and sort of decipher what was going on, read some handwritten information and try and determine whether there was a liability for you to take on that claim, or what sort of injury it was, where it happened, et cetera, as Min pointed out. What these models are very good at is taking what we would have done as character generate or character recognition, which would read a PDF that had every piece of information in the right spot so it could pick it up perfectly and plonk it into your claim system. These models are very good at finding where that information is. And so you don't have to be as codified in accepting information. It'll kind of bring it up and see what's there, what's not there, what's missing, what you need to go back and find. And so put it into a structured format that can then be ingested into your claim system. Similarly, things like medical certificates, what does it mean? Can you kind of take that text and turn it into what are the things that need to be extracted from that? So date of loss, et cetera, et cetera. I'm assuming that's what's on it because I haven't got my glasses on. The other thing, put up a little identifier thing. That's great. That's one of our products. I guess the other thing is, you know, you can ingest and summarise the claims data. I've kind of been through that. But then what it will be able to identify very quickly, what's not there. So there's a piece of information that's not stated. Maybe there needs to be some follow-up with that. And some other things that are in too small writing for me to read as well. But you can kind of get the gist that it very quickly goes through and can understand what's missing. So sometimes these claims forms are very long and you can skim down them and think, yeah, that's all complete, that's fine. Let's move that on to the next stage. But what if it's not? And, you know, when things have gone on to the next stage, it takes time for them to come back and that's not great for the client experience. So there's... also, classification of claims. Now, something that Min pointed out before was some work we did in identifying whether claims were likely to go through to common law. But there's also some work we've done in identifying worker-to-worker claims amongst insurers' data, because they are very difficult to pick up. They're not obvious. And so they have very clear nuances of how they should be managed, because they're kind of like workers' compensation claims, but they're kind of not, because there's third-party labour hire companies involved, etc. So taking descriptions of things And putting that into a box is what these models are very, very good at. But they're not perfect. And so, again, it's that human in the loop that needs to always be, you need to be mindful of as you're going through this. The other thing, sometimes there are mismatches between whether a certificate of capacity has the appropriate dates on it. Somebody may still be incapacitated, but the doctor is only given a short window of incapacity. Understanding that that's the case and being able to flag those things earlier rather than waiting in hindsight and then having to back pay somebody and putting them through the ordeal of not having income for a certain number of weeks. It's, you know, you can use these models for that sort of thing. And this is actually me. I don't have a workers' comp claim. This is me falling downstairs. So I got my MRI report, which had, you know, partial tears of a couple of ligaments, full tears of another ligament in your ankle, bone bruising. You know, it was all pretty messy, and you know, it was fairly bad. But this is a real read of that, and what does the model come up with as being the important plain English thing for somebody to know? So, A, it's severe. It's to do with your ankle, but there's nothing in terms of the tibia and fibula that need to be worried about. There's no ligament damage in between there. So this person, if I was needing to go back to work in a labour intensive job, you're probably looking at maybe, you know, 6 weeks at most, and you would expect them to be back to work. So you can kind of get all that out of it. You can create these higher level pieces of knowledge that the claims officers can utilise rather than having to read through all of the reports. And just on the claims closure assistance, we've got a couple of... we've tracked and modelled out how we think best to manage mental injury claims as well as some physical injury claims, and what are the things you need to tick off in order to close it. In the language of insurance, or to expect that the claim will have resolved well enough to return to work or return to independence. And you can kind of go through what are all the pieces of information we collect in our systems. Right, there's a few things that we don't know, and let's go back and either ask or find out what that information is. We might have it in a system that's actually not linked to the AI itself. So, do I hand back to you now, Min? Oh, I'm going to keep going. Yeah. So we've been through all of these. I'm not going to rap, but we've been through. yes. So we've been through, you know, all of these kind of transformations, and I guess the thing that I wanted to leave you with is. The shorter tail classes of insurance business have had lots of data and transactions, and the analytics techniques have been around for a long time to use that information. With the advent of large language models and AI in particular, as we've been talking about, it's a generative AI, it brings together the ability to utilise that unstructured data that your schemes all have collected for many, many, many years. The techniques, whether they be embeddings or whether they be an understanding of the vision, the language, even voice recordings, etc., means that the techniques and the compute power has now caught up to the nuanced information that you have, and you can make really good decisions based on that previously were impossible. And that's what's really exciting about these large language model AI techniques that are now available to us. You know, I've been crying out for this stuff for 30 years, that we need to be able to do this, and we've dabbled in the past with things like, you know, character recognition or sentiment analysis or the likes. But these models are game changers, and we should really be embracing them. But we should be embracing them with safety and the governance that's required that I spoke about earlier. I think that is now me done. That's us. Thank you.
Not a problem, Aaron. Thank you. Thank you for people sending in questions, and we'll try and burn through one or two before our bell rings properly. So first question from the floor. The media continues to report negative consequences of using AI and the resulting impacts on individuals' focus and cognitive abilities. Are there any such concerns from a future workforce skill base perspective in the insurance disability scheme industry? So I guess that's sort of around everyone's going to be developing an AI culture in the workforce, kids coming through using ChatGPT to review their assignments and relying on it. What's that going to mean for the workforce 10 to 15 years' time?
Look, that's a great question. I don't know that I have a fantastic answer for it, but full disclosure, and I'm supposed to do this all the time, some of my notes were produced by AI, and we make sure that there's that disclosure on anything that we produce, either internally or externally. I think in terms of my area of profession and my industry of work, there's so much that humans need to be involved in and so much thought that needs to go into it that I don't think that's going to necessarily be the case for us. But I can't predict the future, even though I'm an actuary. I think that we just need to be conscious of it, though. So whoever asked that question, great question.
I think that's actually us done.
Come and see us if you want to ask any more questions after.
No, well done, Aaron. Thank you very much.
Thank you.